All right. So if we were going to do a Texas Rangers podcast, there was no doubt that the list was very, very short as far as the names that we wanted to get. But at the very top of that list, of course, is Michael Young, whose number is going to be retired. One of five Rangers whose numbers are going to be retired. He holds dang near every record that has been set offensively in the Texas Rangers annals. So this is a big one. So yes, excited for Michael Young. Do not forget, this is sponsored by Playcast Media. Go to playcastmedia.com, and there you will find basically a podcast in a box. And everything you're hearing right now is via Playcast, and it's awesome. The quality is incredible. The ease with which it's set up is, it's super simple, and that's the key to all of this. Make it simple, make it sound really good. That's what Playcast Media is all about. So go to playcastmedia.com. And get yourself this podcast, this setup. And look, if you want it a little bit extra, they will edit everything for you. And man, it's all self-contained and it's all really, really easy. So if you're into that type of thing and you're ready to start your own podcast, Playcast Media, playcastmedia.com. All right, we're here with Michael Young, who is getting ready to have his number retired, which I guess... For you, it's still got to be, as much as you accomplish with the team, it's still got to be kind of weird that that's happening, right?
Super weird. Yeah. It's tough for me to really put into words. I'm trying to figure out a way to kind of like get my thoughts around this thing so I don't totally whiff my speech on the night of.
God.
Because I've had trouble really kind of like, you know, wrapping my arms around this thing. I'm from California, like you and I were just talking about, and now I'm here in Dallas. It seems like just yesterday I played my first game here, and I'm getting my number retired, along the likes of some great guys that play for the Stars and the Mavs and the Cowboys with their Ring of Honor. And to think that I'm doing something similar with the Rangers is kind of difficult for me to comprehend, but it's an incredible honor. I'm extremely humbled by it and, you know, thankful for the Rangers for giving me this opportunity to say thanks one last time.
To take you back like to when you first got here. And someone would have told you, okay, in 20 years or whatever, that this is going to happen. And you got to give a speech,
like
a big, giant public speech in front of 50,000 people or whatever it is. Would that have freaked you out? Like, how was your public speaking, handling in the media, all that back then?
Didn't really have to do it much. I've had some more practice over the years, obviously. That part doesn't freak me out. It's making sure that I say the right things that I've always kind of, it's always been in my mind. That's why I don't like the idea of just going up there and winging it, even though I prefer to do that.
Yeah.
Because I hate the idea of leaving somebody out. Because when I think about this, I don't want to talk about anything that I did at all. I just have a ton of thanks to give out, both from, you know, coaches to family members to friends to this community for, you know, welcoming me and supporting me over the years and the entire Rangers organization. So again, it's going to be tough to make sure that I get everyone nailed down in that speech to say thank you to.
Let's go back to California, like you mentioned, because you grew up inland, right? You weren't coastal at all.
Yeah, East LA County.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Catholic school?
Yeah. Well, I'm public school all the way up until ninth grade. Then my folks sent me to Catholic school at that point.
Was that a big change?
A little bit. Yeah. Yeah. I went to my junior high had a Chris Woodward was we went to the same junior high school, and I was either going to go to our public school nearby or I was going to go to, you know, a Catholic school. My folks were pretty adamant about where they wanted to send me. My older brother had gone to the Catholic school before me, so I kind of knew which direction my folks were going to send me. But I only knew like two kids when I got there. And I was, you know, 13, 14 years old. Gosh. In a new school. And that's always an odd age to kind of, you know, get dropped into a new social scenario. But it worked out well. I had great memories of that place and, still have a lot of friends that are going to actually be coming in that I went to high school with that are going to be coming in for the ceremony on 31st. So,
oh, cool.
Yeah, very, very thankful for that.
Did you, what else you play besides baseball?
Just growing up, everything. Yeah. Football, baseball, basketball, soccer. I think my soccer stuff was like most people. I played when I was a kid because most parents are like, soccer's a great sport to go out there, be active, run around, kick it, be active. And then all of a sudden, I think like most... My family is the same as most U.S. families where you hit a certain age, it's like, all right, we're going to stop playing soccer. We're going to go to these other ones. So I have basketball, baseball, football. Here I go.
Yeah.
I wish I would have stayed with soccer longer because it's such an incredible sport. And then in no time, by the time I got into junior high, I knew, well, I always knew baseball was my favorite sport. And my high school was a, you know, powerhouse football school. So I was like, all right, I'm not sure if I'm going to, you know, do this. I'm going to play baseball and basketball in high school. Got cut from the basketball team my freshman year. That ended that. And I played baseball year round at that point.
So what was your recruitment like? You end up at UCSB, but in Santa Barbara, but what was, what were the options?
It was heartbreaking, actually. I had one option. You know, I grew up a big USC fan, and I wanted to go there, or, you know, backup school was classic sports school, UCLA. And then there's the local schools that are baseball powerhouses, you know, like Cal State Fullerton and Long Beach State and at the time Pepperdine. And I'm like, all right, I'm going to settle in on one of those five, you know. Got a couple letters, but never one offer from any of those schools. And all of a sudden, I played in a couple, like, the area code games were a big deal. And I played in the area code games in San Diego. And I got a call from UC Santa Barbara, like, hey, we want to have you up for a visit. I said, sure. I'm not getting any other phone calls. So,
had you been to Santa Barbara before?
Never been. So that was my first time going up there. My folks lent me their Jeep Cherokee. I got in. I drove up 2 hours. And I was blown away by the campus, by the weather.
I was going to say, did you even have to even get to campus before you were sold?
For anyone who hasn't been to Santa Barbara, California, it really is just a gem of a place. You know, we were talking about it earlier. Yeah. With no LA hustle bustle, no San Francisco hustle bustle. It's just a little tucked away, little gem. People are polite, friendly, and they're going to do everything to make sure it stays that way. It's not crowded. There's no traffic. It's just a really, really cool place. But I took my visit, went home, and my folks were like, what do you think? I'm like, doesn't really matter what I think. I got one offer right now. They could have sent me to Fairbanks, Alaska, and I'd have said, yes, please. I need to play some college baseball. So I signed. They gave me about a 50% scholarship. I applied for some grants and some aid in other ways after that, and there I went.
Is that an expensive school?
Well, not. It's a public school. So yeah. If you're in state, it's not as bad as, say, someone from Texas going out there, right? Out of state tuition would be a little tougher, but. I think right now probably around, I don't know, I'm guessing, I could be wrong, I'm guessing probably about 20, compared to private schools. That sounds great, a bit of a steal, right?
Yeah.
I could be wrong there, but I that's at least a little north of what it was when I went there. So I'm just, you know, fudging that together.
Okay. So you got drafted though out of high school.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
20 something round?
25th round.
And yeah. So was there any thought that I'm going to go give this a try, or was college?
Yeah, college was it for me. You know, when I was in high school, I was one of those a little bit unusual. I still was growing when I got to college. I was about, when I graduated from high school, I was about 5'11", I weighed about 155 pounds. So I got took in the 25th round. I remember my scout from the Orioles calls me up and he's like, hey, he's like, you need to sign. I was like, I don't need to sign at all. And he goes, well, how many baseball players you never got to the big leagues from UC Santa Barbara? And I'm like, I don't know. And I could really give a damn, to be honest with you. I was like, if there hasn't been one, there's about to be one. And, you know, that's, you know, a little bravado of a 17-year-old kid. And I got to school and I grew a few more inches and kind of hit the weight room a little bit, which I needed to do at that point. And by the time I signed, I was 6'1". I weighed about 170, 175. And, you know, by the time I got to the big leagues, I put on another 20, 25 pounds. So it's just one of those things. It was just kind of this natural progression for me. I wasn't anywhere close to being completely filled out into my, you know, adult body when I was in college.
What'd they offer you in high school to sign?
Yeah, they offered me about $20,000, which is pretty good for a 25th round at the time. Yeah. And that was pretty much it. And but I knew for me in every possible way, emotionally, physically, I just wasn't ready. If I'd have signed, I'd have been a disaster. I just wasn't ready for that.
Did you have like high school girlfriend or anything like that?
She's my wife now.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Did she go to UCSB too?
She went to Columbia.
Where's that?
New York.
In New York.
Yeah.
Oh, I thought you. Okay, I'm thinking in somewhere in California. She went to Columbia, New York.
Actual Columbia country. She has a budding coffee growing business right now.
How long did y'all date?
So we were dating in high school, and then all of a sudden, sure enough, we couldn't have gone to more opposite ends in college. We broke up. You know, long story short, we kind of got back together and she was with me all through the minor leagues and we got married right before my rookie year in the big leagues. So
I'm fascinated with minor league baseball. I don't know if you read that article that came out a couple of months ago, just how difficult it is for those guys.
Oof.
I mean, and I think
it's been a hot topic nowadays about their pay, about everything. Yeah.
It's ridiculous.
It's gross.
And it's kind of indicative of what life is like, because we always, you know, we see the success stories of whether it's, you know, the top end of baseball or football or tennis or any of those sports, but the lower levels that these guys have to go through and you went through, man, it's brutal.
Yeah.
It was there ever a time when you're like, I don't know if I'm going to make this, or were you always thinking?
It's interesting. I was very lucky in the sense that, I was wired in such a way that I really loved baseball. And I don't think I was lucky because I got to the big leagues. I think anyone who gets there earns it through hard work and perseverance, whatever the deal is. Mm-hmm. But I was very lucky in the sense that I love baseball. I think that was a gift given to me that I love to play. I love to be around it. I love to talk about it. I still do. So I never really had those feelings. I always felt like I was going to get there. Just it's going to take time. It's going to take work, but I'm going to get there. But you're right. It is a beating of a. I remember my first when I signed. I got $850 a month. I live with a host family in St. Catharines, Canada. I live right across the street from the ballpark. I had a backpack with my stuff. I go to the field. I play a game. I come back, and that was it. The bus rides are about as bad as you could imagine them being. Yeah. They're brutal. When I was a kid and I first signed, the thing was, all right, we make this difficult to weed out the people who don't want it. And the more I've thought about that, the more I think that just the idea of that is pretty much a crap philosophy. I mean, if you just because you get someone proper enough money to give them proper nutrition and get them ready to play a baseball game, that doesn't take away from their drive or their competitiveness. I mean, if anything, it gives them more ready to play. And if they can make a better wage, they don't have to get a job in the off season. They could devote it to spending time at the track or the weight room or whatever the case may be. So it is a difficult thing. That's an entirely different conversation. But you know, everyone who's in the minor leagues, man, you want that better life, and yeah, they push to get there. And you know, it's a long, windy road, man, to get to the big leagues from the minor leagues.
Did you know a lot of guys? I mean, are you friends with guys that you played minor league ball with still, or did you just kind of disappear from that scene?
Probably the combination of the two. My best friend's Vernon Wells. We signed the same year together. He's from here in Arlington, actually.
Yep.
And I was from the West Coast. We signed, went to the same team together, and we pretty much hit it off right away. You know, we're still best friends to this day. A couple other guys who I signed with, who I'm still close with, but not many. A bunch of guys, I wonder what they're up to.
When you make the jump, you know, when you're climbing the ladder and you kind of leave guys behind or whatever, yeah, it's like, well, see you later.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. There's a couple, there are times when I met guys who I really liked and I enjoyed hanging with, I enjoyed talking to. And I remember I would go up a level, or I remember a couple got released in spring training, and I remember them leaving thinking, I will never talk to that guy ever again.
So weird.
It's just a very odd lot thing. I'm sure people have those kind of dynamics in their workplaces too.
Yeah.
Yeah, very strange. I'm not gonna talk to him again. He's gonna go home. He's gonna get a job. He's gonna have a family probably. And
yeah,
I'll see him when I see him.
It's not too different, you know, from college. For whatever reason, college bonds people together, and yeah, you kind of end up staying in contact with those people. And I don't know why that is, as opposed to when you're 24 and working at a place for 2 years and then you leave. Why aren't you as close to those people? I think just the fact that we went to this school.
Sure.
You know, that keeps you together.
And then you're like, you're both generally speaking, you're in the same boat where, you know, we're from home. We're on our own for the first time. This is my buddy that I met the first time I've been on my own. And, you know, my roommate, my freshman year in college is still a good friend of mine too. So there is like that bonding moment that you have in college.
Did your wife, so as soon as you signed out of school, she's on the train with you?
I signed up for my junior year, so she was still had another year to go in school. So she would go, she went to New York, and I was playing ball. And then when she finished up, she got a job at Fox Sports in LA. So we had an apartment in LA, and I would go play ball. She would work, and at that time she was making a hell of a lot more money than me, so I needed her to keep working. And you know, I think she didn't stop working from that position until my second year in the big leagues. And then she stopped and came out here.
When did you guys actually get married?
Before my first year. So we spent the first year and a half during the season. She'd make visits out here, but she was still living in LA and I was playing here in Texas. And then when the season ended, I went back to our apartment in LA.
Okay. So when the trade happened and you end up in the Rangers organization, what's your mindset like? Yeah. I mean, it's part of it. Everybody knows that could happen, but when something like that does happen, you're like, whoa.
Yeah, that was especially the first time you get traded. You don't really know what to think. Did my team just give up on me? does the new team actually want me? Am I going to go there? Am I going to start? When I got traded from the Toronto, I was on the 40-man roster. Am I still on the roster? Do I still get my benefits? Like, I need to know all this stuff. Fortunately for me, Texas called me right away, and they said they really wanted me in this deal. I went to Tulsa to play double-A ball there. They sent me to the Arizona Fall League right after that. I got married that offseason, and then I spent like a month and a half in AAA, and they called me up. And it was really, when I got traded, I knew that the Rangers had just kind of come off that fresh stretch of division titles in the late 90s, and I got traded in 2000. I was like, all right, you know, their recent history is like one of winning, and this is closer to home from Toronto. If I get to Billy's in Toronto, California is a hike. This is a little closer, and all right, I can make this work. And sure enough, you know, I got here, and the Rangers were just incredible to me. They treated me well. They treated me respectfully, and I wanted to do anything I could to become a winning player for them. And I spent probably about a total of about, you know, 4 months in the minor leagues with them, and here I was.
It was a really weird time in Ranger baseball, too.
Yes, it was.
Because you are coming off those, they were coming off those division titles, and then just things just got odd, and you know, Mr. Hicks dumped all that money into A-Rod, and, you know, A-Rod still, the guy loves you, obviously. He talks really highly of you. What did he teach you? What did you teach him? How did that relationship start and foster itself?
It's interesting because one of my guys who I revere the most in terms of my time with the Rangers are probably people around here that they can't stand. It's really, really interesting. But I always kind of go off how people treat me and how I treat them and our relationship. And Alex and I just got along really, really well. You know, this is a guy who just signed for $250 million, and I'm going to be a rookie. And he was already established as one of the premier players in the game. So I'm thinking, you know, I'm playing second base. He's playing short. This is a perfect guy to learn from. And one thing I'll say about Alex is, like, strictly in terms of baseball, the guy is just a baseball machine. He doesn't stop talking about it.
He's a nerd.
Yeah. For when it comes to baseball, that's all he wants to talk about. So my first game, I remember I got called up. I went to Baltimore, and he's like, come here. He's like, he had me switch around lockers, so I'm my locker next to him. We get on our first flight. He clears out a seat. He's like, hey, you're sitting here from now on. I was like, okay. So, and then all of a sudden, sure enough, we get going. The flight takes off, and he gets like a glass of wine. He's like, gets out a piece of paper with a pen, and he draws a baseball field, and he goes, okay, there's man on first and third. And I'm like, oh shit, we're talking now. All right, okay, this is how this is working. All right. He's like, all right, it's first and third, and there's less than 2 outs, and there's a pop-up right here, and he kind of puts like behind shallow right field. He goes, what do you do? I'm like, well, did I hit it? Am I running? He's like, okay, you're running. So I was like, well, and he's like, all right, you're already wrong. He's like, if you take that much time to make up your mind, you're going to be double play, and I'm going to be pissed. So I'm like, all right, this seems like a trick question, dude. Tell me what to do. So he's like, all right, they both tag, and if they throw it to second, the guy at third keeps going. And like, anyway, this is just like what he did all the time. It's just nonstop baseball. And it'd be like, hey, man, you got on second. I'm pretty sure he's going second sign, shake first, or sign after second indicator. If you get out there and I'm hitting, you better get those signs. I need them. Give me every pitch. Like, it's just nonstop. I think the biggest thing I took for him is, because I could relate, because I love baseball too, like I said. So that was kind of, he was kind of speaking my language. But one thing I took from him was, I think in the 3 years he played here, he might have missed one or two games.
Yeah.
He was out there all the time. And I said, all right, when it comes like to my time where I feel like I can kind of put my footprint on this team a little bit, I'm going to be out there every game. I don't want to take any time off. And that was one thing, probably the biggest thing I learned from him was, you know, how much it means to pick up your lunch pail and go to work every day and play hard even when you don't feel right. And I think a lot of times people can relate to that. I think they want to see that from the guys who play sports. They don't want to see guys out there who only are 100%, only feeling tip-top, and the hangnail keeps them out. I think our fans want to see guys who are out there, you know, just like they are when they go to work, right? No one, we're never tip-top. We're never 100%. We're never all right. And you got to go out there and still find a way to produce and get your job done.
I did one of these with Mr. Hicks, and he was talking about Alex, and Alex came and spoke at some event that he had not too terribly long ago and just wowed the crowd here, and you know, people are going nuts, and Tom was saying, where was that? Mm. Where was that when you were here? Do you think that he has a lot of regret of how he handled his situation here?
I think it was a combination of things. I think one, Alex has definitely grown up a lot. He's a different guy now. I saw him my wife and I went to the Jennifer Lopez concert, and Alex, we hung out with him after the show. Nice. And she was very, very humble and sweet. Now it's just a different guy. Even Christine was like, he's a different dude now.
Yeah.
And not to say I have great experience with Alex when he was here, but he's just different now, you know? And I think that comes from, you know, living in a fishbowl a little bit, owning some mistakes and moving on. I'm a firm believer that, you know, your biggest mistakes don't have to be your defining moments. You know, they can be learning opportunities like anything else. But I do think, you know, when he was here, it was a combination of a lot of things. I think when he signed here, I think he was under the impression that he was just going to be the first one here. He didn't think it was going to be him, that big line, it was him and 24 kids or something like that, which
yeah.
I still think kind of got taken out of context. He called me that day. I remember I was driving to the ballpark. He goes, hey, do me a favor. He goes, I didn't mean anything bad by that. Can you clean that up for me in that clubhouse? I'm like, first of all, I'm not cleaning up anything. You got to do your own messes here. Yeah. But I was like, yeah, listen, I was like, Alex, you know, at the end of the day, man, I said, people who like you won't care. And the people who didn't like you before will care. And he's like, no, you're probably right. And that was it. I didn't care. I knew what he meant. I think what he meant was I thought we were going to be on the kind of like precipice of a bit of a juggernaut. I didn't think it was just going to be me and everyone else going to get traded. And be one thing, I think, if you felt like there was just great prospect coming up right behind me. But we really didn't at the time.
Yeah.
So I think Alex was like, listen, this is not what I kind of signed up for. I think there was a little bit of a disconnect between him and the ownership group when he got here. I think the ownership felt like, all right, this is going to be kind of our dude who we're going to put a lot of money into, and he's going to be kind of wave the Ranger flag a while. Well, Alex was like, well, I came here to win. I know you're paying me a ton of money, but I still thought we were going to win. And it was, like I said, this is a bit of a disconnect, but my experience with Alex was really, really great.
What was a turning point for you, like with the club, where you thought that things were moving in the right direction? You had the good season in 04, mm-hmm. team-wise.
Mm-hmm.
And it was, I remember that year, you know, working in the media and going, wow, this is really cool. This yeah. is, it was out of the blue. But then there was a couple of, you know, more struggling years. Was it Wash coming in, or what was a defining moment, or was there?
Yeah, that's a good question. The 04 year you mentioned, I remember that being a really fun year, man. Yeah. I mean, it was, you're right. We came out of nowhere. We had a lot of really talented young guys. Our position player group was really, really good. We had in trouble pitching. Kenny was awesome. Kenny Rogers was the man. You know, but collectively, we had a difficult time. We couldn't fight the Angels down. We couldn't hunt them down. They were just too good. And then I got super frustrated because the next year, and we almost took a step back
mm-hmm.
when I felt like we could have, as a golden opportunity, to take a step forward. And we just didn't get it done. For whatever reason, we just didn't get it done. It was basically much of the same, maybe a little worse on the pitching side. And we just weren't good enough, you know? And for me, I was kind of like, right, getting close, my fifth, maybe sixth year in the big leagues. And I felt like that was really a time for a lot of our guys were ready to really take off and get these postseason opportunities. And again, I felt like this was a kind of the sleeping giant kind of team. I'm like, this, all the ingredients are here, and we're not doing what we have to do to make this thing work. And I think, to your point, Wash came in 2007.
Mm-hmm.
And at that point, too, it was a weird time because I felt that Wash would be a great addition for our organization. But we were real close to starting a rebuild. Kind of the writing was on the wall a little bit. Got to a real tough start. At that point, we knew Teixeira was going to get traded. And once he got traded, we knew that there was going to be rebuilds right in front of us. So it was a weird, weird time.
Where were you, like, mentally? I mean, you're a veteran. You're putting up huge numbers at the time. And you've established yourself as an all-star. And personally, things are kicking ass for you. But the team's not doing well. So what's the mindset there?
Yeah, I was, you know, it's weird. My going back as a player, you very laser focused, or you know, very short and narrow focus level. Like, all right, this is what I want to do. Like front office people now, the classic thing is, you know, one eye on the present, one eye on the future. You got to make sure you build something sustainable for your fan base. As a player, you don't care. You're like, 3-5 years ago, I do not care. I might not even be here.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I just signed my second 5-year deal with the team, and we come out of the gate slow, and I came out of the gate slow too, and I always thought that Tex would be right there with me. You know, I thought I'll sign, he'll sign, and you know, we got two people to kind of build this thing around. And when he got traded, I was pissed. That piss turned to bummed, and
did that affect your play on the field?
No, I was okay. I was okay on the field. I got to such a bad start. I think I just kind of like my trajectory had nowhere to go but up at that point. You know, I couldn't get any worse. So I got to such a tough start that season. I rebounded well and had a good year, but it was it was just a difficult time for me. I didn't really know what to think. I'm like, all right, I'm in for 5 more years. What did I sign up for? I really didn't know. I didn't mean that in a, you know, to be a jerk or, but I didn't know what I signed up for. Yeah. I'm like, who are we going to be? Why am I here right now? And it was tough because once we traded Tex, it's one thing to get a bunch of big leaguers back for him. We got a bunch of eight ball kids. I'm like, I, these kids might be here in 3 years. They might not. They might not ever show up at all. So it was a really, really tough time. That was one of my few times when the offseason got here. I love to play baseball, but it was one of those things that I'm like, I need a bit of a mental break right now. I need to kind of reassess things like mentally. I need to find a way to get to a good place to get ready for next year.
Was there ever a time when you thought you would try to force your hand and be like, hey, you want to shop me around? I'm fine with that.
Well, you know, it's weird. That ended up happening eventually a couple years later.
But
you know,
prior to all that.
Yeah. No. I was actually okay. I didn't, you know, I'm like, I signed my contract. I was aware enough of the business side and professionally speaking, it's not cool for me to sit there and sign my deal with the team. When you sign your deal, you place your faith in them and they place their faith in you. And I'm not going to jump ship just because, you know, we're not winning a couple games. You know, after 2008, that was a rough year for me. I was banged up pretty much the whole year, broke a couple fingers and didn't put in anywhere near the numbers I thought I could. And then sure enough, after that season, they asked me to go to third. And I knee-jerked a lot in my decision-making and how I reacted. And I told them I don't want to. In my mind at that point, I felt like I was doing my job and I felt like there's a lot of other places that should have been higher priorities. I said, we should address those priorities before then come back to me and then we'll do what we have to do. But that's not my job. My job is not to be the GM. My job is to play baseball. So once we kind of squared that away and I, you know, kind of took third and accepted it and said, all right, this is where I want to play. I wasn't sure how good I'd be over there because I'd never played third base before in my life. And that was probably another reason why I was a little apprehensive about the whole move because I never wanted to go to short. Right. I wanted to stay at second my entire career. And now I'm just going farther and farther away. And I'm like, I know how this ends up, man. I know exactly how this ends up. I mean, like, and that's why it became tough for me to handle. And sure enough, we hit that kind of point a couple of years after that.
Was all that handled looking back at it in hindsight, and you got a decade to reflect, basically, would you do it differently?
For sure. After 2008, I would have done a lot of things differently. And I've said that publicly before. It was one of those things, again, a knee-jerk reaction is always a knee-jerk reaction that goes public is almost always going to be a tough one.
Yeah.
So yeah, I would have taken more time to consider it, think about it, hear the team out, and then go from there. Because at the time, I just really said no, and I was really, really pissed off, as opposed to telling him, hey, listen, man, these are why I'm frustrated. These are my reasons, you know, as to why I think this is a tough move for me personally. That should not factor into what you think is the best move for the team. But this is just me communicating with you. We never really had that point. It was just, I got pretty pissed off, and, you know, that was pretty much it. And in fairness to everybody involved, by the time I got to camp, it was squashed. I put my arm around Elvis. I said, listen, anything that you heard in the offseason, nothing to do with you. Anything you need from me, I'm here to help you. And I got a job to do. We all do. Let's get to work.
Well, he was like 11 anyway. So did he really understand what
he was probably going on? 9. Yeah. Yeah. I remember it was, and he acted every last bit of 11 too. But he is such a good kid, man. And, you know, we got to camp and I put my arm around my head, man, you don't deserve this. You don't deserve to come into your first camp and have to deal with this. You know, have to deal with, you know, my collateral damage. You should just come up here and just have to play short and worry about acclimating yourself to the big leagues. I'm like, this is going to be hard enough.
Yeah.
And he did great, man. He did such a good job. And, you know, I got used to third a little bit that year. It was still a very, very uncomfortable position for me to play, but our team was kind of mowing a little bit. We were getting going. We were building momentum. And in 2009. That was his first year here. And my hands were healthy again that year. And I started kind of feeling like myself again after the 2008 year. And you could really kind of see now that Tech's trade starting to pay off a little bit.
Yeah.
And at that point now, I was super excited. We had a ton of momentum built up as an organization. And we almost made the playoffs that year. Then, you know, 2010 came and the rest is history.
What was, were you at that, that dinner barbecue that was at Mr. Hicks' house when Wash was interviewed? Were you part of that at all?
I was not, no.
You weren't?
No.
So what was the first time you met him?
Well, I had met Wash because he was the third base coach for the A's. Yeah. So when you have an in-division team, and I was playing short, he's a third base coach, so we would kind of always kind of have a chance to rap back and forth a little bit. But one thing I remember about Wash was I always respected a lot of the A's players, Eric Chavez and Mark Ellis and Miguel Tejada. And every last one of those guys, it would just come up all the time. They start talking about him all the time. They start talking about Wash. It just never failed. We'd be talking about whatever. Wash would come up. So I saw his name kind of circulating in the interview process. I'm like, damn, this could be pretty fun. And sure enough, man, he got the job and immediately tried to put in. It wasn't actually great right away. There's a couple of times where Wash came in, really wanted to be, no matter how well intentioned you are, when you have a team like we were, who had scuffled. I feel like there are times when a new person comes down, there's that like the new sheriff in town kind of mentality.
Yeah.
And I feel like they're trying to change stuff that doesn't need to be changed sometimes. Obviously, we need more tweaks. I remember I told Wash one time we came up and we were going to play Tampa Bay, and it was his first year. And I talked to him in his hotel room. He's like, man, he goes, you guys need to do this, 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 and that. He goes, we're in Oakland. I say, hey, Wash, I'm like, I'm just be real honest with you here. I know you want to change a lot of stuff, but the only reason you beat us is because you had Hudson Mulder and Zito. Let's be real frank about that. I'm like, you're coming in trying to change everything. I'm like, if we had your pitching, we would have kicked the shit out of you every year. I don't know if I'm allowed to say that right here, and he just started laughing. He goes, oh, I was like, we can both be right here. I'm like, just do me a favor. Don't change the things that need to be changed. There are certain things here that are already strengths and just let them be strengths. Now, anything else you want to change, we're all on board. And after that, I think Wash kind of like really got going. I'm not trying to say it was because of me, but it was anyone in a new position. This is the first time he'd ever managed, coming to a brand new organization. He's trying to put things in place that he really believes in, all the while trying to get to know people and make him build some relationships. It's a tough job. And that first half, it was understandably tough on him.
So how difficult is that? I mean, obviously it was easy for you to go to him, but are some managers, like you can see it in their eyes, like you can't take that step with them? Or did everybody that you work with, you were able to do that?
No, I think that's fair. I think there are some, it takes a really special person to listen and to, even when you know that there's going to be some, you know, basic disagreement, to be able to welcome a back and forth, to welcome some disagreement, whether it's in sports or anything else. It takes some special people to do that. A lot of times they hear one word that might set them off and boom, wall goes up and that's it. I'm out. You know, they disconnect. Wash wasn't like that. He was very much a relationship builder, and that's, at the end of the day, man, that's why he was really good at this.
Did he, cause you hear from everybody, whether it's Chavez or anybody that he's coached, that the way that he teaches, people are like, I've not heard that before. And I feel like, you know, once you reach a certain level professionally, you've heard everything, but I guess he did deliver it in a different way.
Well, I think it even when you hit maybe the top of your career, everyone welcomes energy, enthusiasm, positive outlook. You can never get enough of that.
Yeah.
It just always matters. It always makes a difference. It always has an impact. And Wash, I think, knew that. And that he wasn't trying to do that. That's just who he was. And we loved it. You know, imagine that taking ground balls over and over again through the minor leagues, a couple years in the big leagues, and all of a sudden you do take one ground ball, sweet, and Wash is like, yes, practice. And he's doing that. It's like, that was sweet. Do it again. You do it one more time. He's like, yes. I mean, for a spring, February ground ball in Surprise, Arizona, and you're taking these ground balls, you're like, I freaking love this dude, man. And he never took a day off from that. That was him every single day. And once we kind of got to a point where the talent level started to match our energy level a little bit, well, that's when we had some really good teams.
When Josh got here, were you aware of his Herculean nature? I know, I'm sure you knew his past and all that, but I mean, as far as what he was capable of before you actually saw it, were you aware of it?
Sure. I'm trying to think of like guys in sports who, when they walk around, you're like, whoa, they haven't even done anything. Like, imagine like, you probably know this better, but say Adrian Peterson at OU back in the day, and he was like walking around in pads, but even before, you're like, who the hell is that?
Yeah.
Just how he walks around. LeBron James walked in here, you know, like, whoa.
Yeah.
I remember we were playing the Reds in 2007 interleague play, and I went, who the hell is that guy? And they're like, that's Josh Hamilton. I think he had sleeves on or something, so I couldn't see how he was all tatted up. And I'm like, oh yeah, that's right, Josh Hamilton. Like, everyone knew who he was. I'm like, that's right, he got to the Reds this year. Okay. I'm like, damn. Like 6'4", 245, like fastest guy on the team. He's one of those guys, right? So we all knew what he was capable of. But at the time, we never had pitching, right? We traded Edinson Volquez, who's our top pitching guy, for Josh Hamilton. And I remember I heard the news. I'm like, what the hell, man? How many times are we going to do this? Like,
right.
We didn't have a guy who was a chance to be a really good pitcher. And all of a sudden, I was like, I remember I had these moments. I'm like, chill, like, not doing this again. Like, you play, your job is to go play baseball. So all of a sudden, we get to spring training and Josh is taking BP. I'm like, okay, so this is why we got this dude. Yeah. It was just, a different dude, man. And even in the big leagues, when good players are really good players. There are certain guys that just kind of like, it's like stop traffic. He was one of those guys. And I played with guys like that. I played with Alex and Pudge and Juan, and Josh is one of those guys. You know, he's the size that does everything pretty effortlessly. Just an incredibly gifted dude, you know?
It was weird because when he got there, the first spring training, we had him up. We were out there doing our shows out there, and we had him up, and we were talking with him about baseball. And Mike Reiner, who I do the show with, was asking him about who was your favorite team growing up, and he was like, I don't really like baseball.
Yeah,
like I'm fine out here playing it, but I don't watch it or follow it. I'm just like, what?
Mm-hmm.
How is that possible?
Yeah,
I mean, was that kind of a unicorn in the way he thought?
No doubt. Absolutely correct. I was a baseball junkie. I loved it. I was like, I remember being a kid and I would wake up for school and I'd pull my bowl of Lucky Charms. I'd look at the sports page and start breaking down box scores, right?
Yeah.
That's just what I did. And I still do it. I love baseball. I could see Josh right now at his ranch in a blind, picking off deer, being happy as hell doing that. That's what he is. That's what he wants to do. I think he loved to play baseball. I don't necessarily think he was a massive fan of watching it. I think he just loved to play. But he was, that was probably the first guy that we got that was, Kins and I were here, Murph and Nelly kind of just got here. When we got Josh, so we're like, all right, now we're starting to assemble some like legit championship talent.
Yeah.
You can talk all you want about great guys, good, you know, good people. If you don't have talent, you're going to get smashed.
Sure.
Right. And we needed that. And now all of a sudden Josh comes and we're like, all right, we're getting closer now, and plus he plays the middle of the field position, and it's hard to really describe how gifted the guy was.
What was it, you know, because looking at it from the outside in, it seemed like there was, you know, you had your veteran presence, but the infusion of youth. We talk about Elvis being 11, right. And Ian was the same way. Like, they just seemed so happy when things were going well and you guys were winning and, you know, running out of the dugout if there's a walk-off and everybody's going crazy, and it looked like a little league team.
Yeah. Yeah. It's really true. I remember the first time we were stretching in Surprise, and Elvis comes out with like a blow pop in his mouth. And I'm like, and I was admittedly like super old school. I'm like, hey, dude, like, what are you doing? Like, lose the blow pop, get there and stretch like everybody else. Like, put your fingers on your toes and let's get this done. Right. And then after a while, I was like, you know, man, I have to embrace this. Like, this guy plays. We could use a little jolt of 11-year-old, you know? Yeah. I think the best teams have that really good combination of like, and it'd be one thing if Elvis like was 11, but never did things in a professional manner. That was never an issue. He's a very professional kid. So I'm like, all right, I got to let these guys be themselves. And all of a sudden, you know, we start kind of going there doing the claw and the antler thing. And I had a tough time doing that. They're hitting doubles, doing these claw things. And I'm kind of at second. I'm like, yeah, it's kind of like halfway there. Like, the other dugout's looking at me too, man. I'm not going to make a fool out of myself, you know? Like, and that's just kind of how I was wired. Some guys are like that. Some guys are like, they just let everything go on the field. And it was cool to kind of see guys who are very comfortable doing that versus guys who are kind of like, all right, I'm going to meet you halfway on this thing. But this is not how I do things on the field, you know? So, but Elvis was one of the ringleaders for those kinds of things on our team. He kind of just, and it was fun watching it. You know, we needed that jolt of energy, and Elvis played with a lot of joy, and we needed a jolt of that, like I said. And you know, he was probably the ringleader.
When you got Cliff Lee, it changed a lot of things. And I remember it was an interleague game, obviously, and he hit a double, and it may have been like second start, I think. I think his first start, he got beat up pretty good in Arlington. But you guys went on the road. He hits a double, and he's on second base, and he's looking in the dugout, and everybody's waiting for him to do claw antler or whatever. And, you know, he's like, oh, Jesus.
Yeah, what did I sign up for?
Okay,
all right.
I was like, oh, he did it. Yeah, oh, my God, yes.
Cliff was one of those guys, right? If Cliff and, I remember, like, Bumgarner out in China, he and Cliff are, like, the same kind of dude.
Yeah.
And I've come to appreciate everyone for who they are. There are some guys who are going to be incredibly emotional on the field and they can hit a two-out single, and they're going to go bananas at first base. And the other guys hit a bases loaded double, and they're going to just go like, all right, sweet, little fist bump, and they're going to move on. Everyone, you know, different strokes. Everyone's a little different.
Yeah.
But Cliff was one of those guys, like, he kept everything in, and he was like assassin on the mound, but he wasn't going to give you all that little Mickey Mouse stuff that we were kind of had a tendency to do with those teams.
Was it whenever you got the news that you did get Cliff, was it like, holy shit, this is real now?
Oh, man. That was, we were at home, and we knew we were going to do something. And for the longest time, man, we were the team that was trading pieces at the deadline, right? So all of a sudden, 2010 rolls around. We have Vladimir Guerrero from the Angels. Almost like that was a big emotional jolt for us because that guy just kicked the living shit out of us for several years. Yeah. And all of a sudden, we put him in our lineup. It's almost like we weakened them and made us a lot stronger. It was just a, and he was like a big, like, star in the game, right? We take him out of there and put him in our lineup. It was huge. And Vladdy took that personally, man. We played them. It was like, it was go time for him. Yeah. You could see it in his eyes. And so that was the first step. And all of a sudden, we're like at the deadline. We're like, all right, we're going to get somebody. And all of a sudden, war starts filtering around that we're getting close on Cliff. And all of a sudden, like, they're like, I remember our Chris Lingus was our director of travel. He's like, we got him. And we just went bananas. I mean, it was that, it was crazy.
See,
man.
We need video of stuff like that. Yeah. The room just erupted.
We went
you know?
Nuts. And they're like, we got him. He's going to pitch tomorrow. I'm like, where's he at right now? Like, I think he's in Seattle. He's coming. He's going to be here late tonight. He's pitching tomorrow. We're like, why don't we give him a day? He's like, well, we wanted to, that way we had it lined up so he pitched against the Angels or something like that. And that was it, man. Cliff was just, that was the big jolt that we needed in terms of like legitimizing us as a team, as a real contender. And then at that point, we had arrived.
You know, you deal with the Yankees, and I was at that series up there in New York, and that was one of the most glorious things ever, seeing Yankee Stadium completely clear out by like the fifth or sixth inning.
Yeah.
It was weird.
Yeah.
But it was a really, really cool moment to get that done up there and then close them out here. But I look back at that, at the 2010 World Series, and it was almost like, and this is from a fan standpoint.
Sure.
You're so happy to be there. You don't really care what happens. Like, throughout it all, I just couldn't believe that this, and I grew up in Arlington. Mm-hmm. So I grew up 10 minutes from the ballpark, and I would go sit in the bleachers with my parents
right.
as a little kid, and I'm the little Dr. Pepper Junior Ranger and all that. And I was a total dork. And to see this team finally get to this place that I thought they never would, I didn't really care what happened.
Right.
And I was fine with losing it.
Mm-hmm.
And now I look back at 2010, forget 2011, 2010, I'm like, How do you look back at that series?
Right. Well, it's interesting because everyone looks at a series as a 7-game series. So you almost think like one game doesn't mean much.
Mm-hmm.
One game in a series is massive. Every win in a postseason series is huge.
Yep.
Both, because basically what a postseason series is basically just like a tennis match of momentum, back and forth, back and forth. When they get it, we got to get it back. When we got to hold on to it, because it matters, especially when you're playing in your home crowd. But I felt like we went into the World Series. It was weird. It was we were probably the favorites against Tampa Bay. Before I go to the World Series, I'll give you one quick Tampa Bay story. It was a 5-game series for the first one. We win the first two in their park. Right, so we're like, all right, now we come back to our place. We just need one to put that series away in front of our home crowd. Our franchise had never won in a series. And sure enough, we dropped two in our home park. And we got to go back to Tampa Bay, face David Price. And we're like, how the hell do we let this happen? I remember the planes landing in Tampa. We're like, why are we here right now, right? But you got to get over it. You got to get going. So sure enough, the next day we have a game. And the starting pitcher always the last one to arrive for a game. You know, for us, like that group, for a 7 o'clock game, we'd show up at 1, 2 on the road and just hang out. Well, Cliff's pitching that day, and he walks in probably around 4:30 or so. He walks in, and we're kind of doing our thing in the clubhouse, and also we're just staring at Cliff. He's got street clothes on. He goes to his locker, takes off his watch, puts it in. You know, I'm sure he knows people are looking at him, turns around, and he goes, we're good. That's all he says. And at that point, we went, we're like, we're good. And that was, he goes 9 innings, shoves, we win, we celebrate there. And then the Yankees series was next, and we took care of business. But the Giants series, I think that was the first one. The Yankees were the defending champions.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, going back actually, I think the Tampa Bay was actually in one division. They were favored to beat us. The Yankees were favored to beat us. And I think everyone had us beating the Giants.
Yep.
Cliff was, you know, basically like Sandy Koufax at that point. He was almost taken as like this mythical type figure. And we went in thinking we were going to win. We were super, super confident after that Yankee series. But I honestly think that when we went in, everyone's like, oh, we have Cliff. We're going to do well. Well, they had Tim Lincecum,
yep.
who was at the time just as good.
Sure.
And then it's almost like it's not saying we forgot about how good they were, but we were just so focused on ourselves. And it was almost like, We didn't give San Francisco hadn't gotten enough the credit that they deserved. They were a really, really good team. And even now, like most people say, oh man, you just ran into a hot team and they beat you. I'm like, we ran into a really, really good team that was hot. I mean,
you ran into a team that won three World Series in 6 years.
Right. And then they ran Matt Cain for game two, who was just as good as Lincecum. So when I say one game is so important, I remember thinking, but they won the first two in San Francisco. We come back home, we're facing Jonathan Sanchez, and we win that game. And then we go into game four, and we had a really right-handed lineup. And we're like, all right, let's win game four. They got a rookie lefty going. And then we have Cliff going game five. We'll win game five. We'll go back. We'll just need one game in San Francisco. That was what we're thinking. Because we thought if Cliff's pitching, we're going to win. Well, in game four, the rookie pitcher was Bumgarner. Guy we didn't know too much about. Yeah. So sure enough, he deals that game. And now we're instead of thinking we're going to be up 2-2 with Cliff, we're down 3-1 with them. And now instead of thinking we have Cliff, we're thinking they have Lincecum.
Yeah.
And boom, that's it. Series over. I mean, that's how these things go, man. You got to get momentum. You got to keep it. And you got to finish. And sometimes there are a lot of things in baseball games, a lot of things kind of happen out of your hands. It's really, really difficult to make sure that those things go the way you want. Because like in a basketball game, when the Mavs were playing in Miami in game six, whenever it comes down to nut cutting time, boy, we're going to give the ball to 41 and he's going to handle it for us.
Yeah.
Baseball, you can't do that. You know, you have to figure out a way. Sometimes like if your best hitter makes the last out of an inning, your next inning, that guy doesn't see the field. So you got to figure out a way to make this thing work when sometimes your best pieces aren't necessarily involved in that moment. But I mean, San Francisco just played incredibly good baseball that series. They earned every last bit of that title.
What was confidence level going into 2-11? Because it had to have been through the flipping roof.
Yeah. Yeah, we were good. We were good and we knew it. Adrian was added to the mix. Unbelievable player. We played against him for years when he was with the Mariners.
By the way, were you aware? I mean, Adrian obviously he's a god around here. He's just like you. But until you actually play with him on a day-to-day basis, were you aware of how good he actually was?
No. And in fairness, I think he got better when he got here.
Yeah.
He wasn't this good in Seattle. He was a really good player. I had a ton of respect for him. He played hard. Dude took a freaking ground ball to the testes and played through it. I mean, I don't know.
He didn't wear a cup.
He had never wore a cup. I don't know how. I mean, I had a ton of respect for the guy. Signed that big contract, played incredibly hard for a team that, you know, wasn't all that great up in Seattle. And never stopped him from going out there and just like max effort every single game. So a ton of respect for Adrian. But he got better when we got him. Just a stud of a baseball player, man. But you're right. We were incredible. From a position player wise, every position we were covered. Adrian goes to third. I played all over the place. We got Knapp to catch. I mean, we went into spring training. We were rolling. The only thing we thought that we're like, all right, we don't have Cliff. Like, right. So we're going to have to make this thing work on the starting. We need some young guys to really step up starting pitching wise. And Matt Harrison and Derek Holland did that. So we got off to a fire start, kept it going all year, and rolled that right into the postseason.
It was weird because it was almost like it was you guys were so good and the confidence level was so high that it did seem like that unbeatable year, you know, and you were a heavy favorite going into to the Cardinals. I think you were. At least I want to say that I remember talking about it that way. Maybe heavy favorite isn't the right thing to say. But, you know, when you go in, whether it's a playoff series or a World Series or whatever, do you look at the other team, no matter how confident you are, and say, they are just like us? There's a reason they're here, too.
Yeah. Wash was really good about that. He used to always kind of, like, make sure we focus on ourselves because we're playing a team that's a good team. And they're saying the same thing about you guys right now, rightfully so. But the way we take care of business, we focus on us. We focus on things we got to do. And we did that. We did that. You know, we came out. I remember thinking this series was going to be different because they won game one and they had a lead going to the ninth in game two. And we scored two in the ninth to steal a game two. And that was like, all right, this is why we're different. Right. Now we're going to take care of business. We thought we'd run the table at home. And then Albert Pujols goes deep three times in game three. We won game four and game five. So we thought we were in a really, really good spot, which we were. And, you know, it's one of those things, man. It's like, again, I was talking about home crowds in the postseason. They matter. They matter, you know. And, you know, we get into the ninth inning and they executed.
So that was back when they had home field because of the All-Star game.
Yeah. Yeah, I hated that rule. Okay. Not because of what happened to us.
Well, yeah, just in general. That's like the dumbest thing
stupid.
Ever.
Stupid. Yeah, I remember in 2006, I won the All-Star Game MVP, and they asked me about it after the game. I'm like, oh, do you feel differently about it now? I'm like, no, it's a silly rule. The commissioner might have been around somewhere. I don't know. But an All-Star Game where most of the guys who play in a World Series is a really special time, man. I mean, the players who play recognize, especially in that 2011 series, because it was kind of just an epic series back and forth. And we would talk about it on the field. You know, I'd get on second and I'll talk to their second base shortstop, like, damn, this is fun. Yeah. Like, this is why we've
so
always
you realize
wanted
in
to,
the moment.
No doubt. Okay. It was obvious how much fun it was. But most of those guys aren't even a part of the All-Star game.
Yeah.
You know, they're not even there. They're not even taking part. They're getting their 3 or 4 days off. And to have that game, means so much is just ridiculous. And if it does mean so much, Mike Trout should never come out of the game. He should be getting 5 at-bats.
Right.
He shouldn't be getting 2, and then they pull him for someone who's not as good as him.
Right.
You know, it made no sense. And I understand that MLB was under a ton of pressure after the 2002 game where it was a tie and the fans were pissed, but fans were probably pissed for that one night. And then they forgot about it.
Yeah, it doesn't matter.
The second half gets going, they refocus on what's really important. So, regardless of what happened to us, it really was a silly rule. I'm happy that they don't have that anymore.
So do you, how often do you think about that series, or whether it's game 6 or game 7 or whatever, does it slowly dissipate? Does it slowly go away?
Probably. Yeah. It's one of those things where you think about it and the pain's still there.
Sure.
You know, even for this was 9 years ago.
Dude, I mean, we've talked to Charlie Waters about, you know, that guy won a couple of Super Bowls, but that Super Bowl in 79 against the Steelers that they lost, I mean, it still rips his soul out as a 70-year-old guy.
Yeah, it's you put in everything there, and especially for us, like, this would have been our franchise's first one.
Yeah.
And we really were happy to be the team that could do that, to provide that for this fan base. And the tough part was, you know, there's most teams every season, like you said, they have that empty soul feeling at the end of the season. Most teams get that. One team gets to celebrate. And to be an athlete and to compete at that level, you've got to be willing to have your heart stomped on a little bit, because it just might not go your way. Even though I can't think of anything really we did wrong in that series up until just not executing in the ninth inning of that game. Mm-hmm. We did everything right. We were in a position to win in 6 games. You know, they win the first one, and we were basically in a position to take 4 out of 5 from them, winning the last one in their home ballpark. We did everything we were supposed to do. And to have it not work out is like just, it's frustrating, but it's one of those things where I'm really proud to be a part of a team that goes out there and risks all that and says, let's go. Let's try and make this happen. It takes a lot to do that too. And, you know, we were out there, we competed as hard as we could. We didn't get it done, which is, you know, frustrating from a professional standpoint. But from a personal one, I'm really proud to have had the chance to suit up with those guys.
How weird was it, or difficult was it after that game, after game 6, knowing that there was another game that you had to like regroup immediately in the clubhouse and be like, okay, that sucked, but we got another game.
That's exactly what it was. And it was weird. I'm not sure if there's no way we regrouped that night. There was just it was obvious what the pain was there. So
was there a day off, or was it the next night?
No, we got out next night. We got out, which is probably a good thing, actually.
Yeah, it's true.
So we all probably just went home, back to the hotel, slept fast, got back there. We had a little team meeting beforehand. And the one thing about that team, it was an incredibly confident group. So I think we all were like, all right, let's back to work. You know, we had an opportunity to win it last night. We showed we can beat these guys in their home park. Let's do it again tonight. We go out there and we put up 2 in the top of the first. I think it went, Kins got on. I forget exactly how it went. I think Josh might knock someone. I hit a double, knocked in 1 or 2, and we're up 2-0 right away. Boom. And then they put 2 back on us in the bottom of the first. And that was when it was kind of like, shit, these guys aren't going away. Like the last 4 innings we've scored on them, they put something back on us every time. And I'm not saying the wind was totally out of our sails at that point, but that's when we were kind of like, man, these guys just aren't going away. And I'm not sure. I think we lost 6-2 or 5-2. Yeah. I don't think we scored the rest of the way. A lot to do with the fact they pitched really well. But that's what basically the Cardinals did for the entire run of the postseason. I mean, they got into the postseason on the last game of the regular season. So they were kind of used to kind of like, you know, surviving by the skin of their teeth a little bit, and they did it till the end.
Yeah, we called them that effing team, mm-hmm. a team that sneaks in like that and then just keeps, just crazy things keep happening.
It's one of those things, the rational side of me, the fan side of me is like, this is what makes baseball great. You know, it's, there's no clock. You know, you just got to get them all. You got to get them all. So it's, you know, tough as it is for us and for our fan base, I can imagine if there was, if it rolled in reverse and we had done that year, that's like an epic team that a fan base can kind of hang their hat on a little bit. Sure. So it's tough, but I mean, again, very, very proud of the guys I played with and the runs we went on.
So you look back at it, there's so many records that you have with the Rangers. Is there anyone in particular that stands out more than any other?
Not necessarily. I think probably just games played. The ones I'm probably, you know, the hits record is probably in the total bases thing are probably the most satisfying in terms of, you know, what I did on the field. But the games thing is, it reminds me of how long I played here. And that means a lot to me. Like I said, I never thought that I'd be here this long. I thought when I hit free agency, I'd either take it back out west or maybe get, you know, arm twisted by one of those East Coast teams. But it didn't take long. Once I was in like year three or four, I was a couple of years in front of free agency, and I was like, I'd love to stay here. I like playing here. And I realized what a good sports town it is. I got to be fans of the other teams here. It's an easy place to live. My family that would come out from California loved coming out here to visit. And I started to really like it. And, you know, so when I think about any record I have with the team, the games played things means a lot. It just reminds me of, you know, a long, long career spent here, which is really tough to do in baseball. You don't really see that anymore. But to be here well over a decade and to have a reminder of that in the games play thing is pretty cool.
The roof that is going to be in the, on the new park, we talk about that all the time. Just, you know, as a little kid, when I would go out to the ballpark, I had no idea. I just, heat didn't bother me, whatever. It's 100 degrees. Great. I'm here at the ballpark. Yeah. But once you become an adult and maybe you start taking your own kids out there, it's like, holy shit, it's hot.
Steamy, man.
Yeah, and then I'm like, and those guys are out there in full uniform having to play. I mean, what would a roof have meant?
Oh, my God. It would have been, well, there's a lot to unpack there. Let me go from the beginning. For one, I think it's way tougher on the fans and the players because when we're playing, we're supposed to be dirty, filthy animals down there. We're sure. Cool. When you're watching a game up there, you don't want to be reapplying deodorant every inning. And that's pretty much what you got to do. I remember one time we had our team picture was like in August. And one year they had the idea they were going to put us in the stands with literally the entire organization. Everyone employed by the organization would be like this massive employee picture, players included. So I remember we're sitting there and we're in full uniform. And I remember we're looking around. It's like 3 p.m. And we're like,
oh my God,
this is hell. How do they come here to watch us play in this? This is miserable. The sun is like literally hanging out on our shoulder. Like, this sucks. Like, and that's when that was my first experience of what it must be like to be a fan. The seats are hot. There's someone right next to me who's like, you know, he stinks. I stink. This is brutal. So it's tougher for fans. But the roof is going to mean so, so much, man. It's going to help in a lot of different ways. I remember in the 2009 All-Star game, Roy Halladay was getting close to be a free agent, and he had been rumored to kind of get being traded. So I wanted to see if I can kind of pick his brain a little bit. And I was like, what's up, Doc? And I knew him pretty well. And I got to know him really well when I played in Philly. And we started talking, we were in the training room just hanging out. And I was like, yeah. He's like, yeah, we started like BSing a little bit. I was like, so you're a free agent. He's like, don't even think about it. No chance I pitched there. Didn't even, he's like.
We always said that.
Yeah. He's like, no way.
Yeah.
He's like, nope, don't even. He's like, when I pitched there, it's like, do you ever see my face? I'm like, yeah, you're bright red. He goes, I'm bright red when I pitched there. And then we got Cliff. And I remember I shot Cliff like a, you know, what's up text when we got traded. I'm like, dude, what's up? Welcome. We're looking forward to it. He's like, remember the first thing he texted? He's like, shit, it's going to be hot. Like, first thing he says, not like, oh, I'm excited about the pennant race. He's like, it's going to be hot. It's hard down there, man, especially tough on pitchers. It's hard down there in that heat. It's a beating. And to finally get the chance to, you know, put a roof on the place and kind of just be on level playing ground, I think is really going to be beneficial, both for our fan base who, you know, get to come down to a game now and not have to worry about the sun beating them down. And another thing, too, this is in North Texas, man. We get storms that pop up here all the time. It's nice to kind of, especially they say on a school night. You know, if you're in a weekday and, you know, you're worried about the weather, you'll know the game starts at 7:00. Yep, you're not going to get any delays. You're going to play at 7:00. You're going to get your kids home in a reasonable time. There's going to be no delays. We're playing. That's helpful, from a fan standpoint, but from the heat you know, comfort standpoint of that roof, man, it's going to be massive.
So unequivocally in your time here, in your mind, there is no doubt that this team lost out on free agents because of heat.
No doubt.
Yeah.
No doubt in my mind. It, I mean, and you know what? Even if I'm being nice, it definitely didn't help. That's right. Me being the nicest as I can possibly be. But I talked to two, you know, like I said, the doc conversation, you know, rest in peace. That was, didn't even let me get started. Didn't even like let me sell them.
No. It's like, nah, no. Nope. Shut up.
Nope.
Not happening.
Yeah. So that's just, that was what we were dealing with, man. It was tough.
Well, dude, congratulations. It'll
appreciate
be fun
you,
here in a couple of weeks.
Thanks, man. I appreciate you having me on.
Yeah, for sure. For
good
sure.
Talking to you.
Do well in the speech.
Right
we'll
on.
Be there.
Appreciate you, man.
Michael Young.
All right.
All right, cool. Thanks for listening, everyone. If you want to check out more, hit subscribe on whatever your favorite podcast app is, and we will see you next time on Your Turn.